I was coming from Montgomery. I had my guitar on my back. When this stranger stopped beside me in an antique Cadillac. He was dressed like 1950, half drunk and hollow-eyed. Say it's a long walk to Nashville, would you like to ride? I sat down in the front seat, turned on the radio. Them sad old songs coming out of them speakers was solid country gold. Then I noticed the stranger was ghost white pale when I asked him for a light. I knew there was something strange about this ride. He said, "Drifter, can you make folks cry when you're playing sign? Have you paid your dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend them guitar strings? Boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? If you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride."
Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher, and pretty soon, hopefully, our lips to God's ears, the next time LeVar Ball decides to appear on Miz TV and run around like a crazy man without a shirt, someone can toss him a Les Thatcher t-shirt.
Yes, really. Oh, man. That particular segment, the whole thing has just been oversaturated, I guess. But, and Vic, when I hear somebody say, well, you know, any publicity is good, and I'm thinking there is a point where that isn't good, you know, and I'm thinking, wow, this guy is just friggin' nuts. Well, the thing, he's got a pair of $500 sneakers to sell. He's got to be out of his mind. But, that whole segment was just a train wreck. And yet I saw on the internet, and I'm sure you picked it up probably on the board here or something, that some guys thought it was really cool.
I did see that in a few places, yeah. They thought he acquitted himself well, which I'm not really sure what show they were watching.
And I'm not really sure what that says for the American public in general, either.
Or maybe the state of Monday Night Raw.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. That's a fact. But, you know, when you put non-wrestling people, well, there's non-wrestling people writing these shows, so I suppose. But when you put I was talking to somebody the other day, and I remember, like they had the mayor of Baltimore or something come on, I think Randy, Savage was doing color with Monsoon, and, this was after Hogan had left, Ari had left WWF, the mayor's just trying to, you know, to blend in, and they had asked him something about, and he said, "Yeah, I'm a Hulkamaniac," or something. And this is after Hogan had already gone to WCW, and I cringed, and you know, which didn't cost me anything. But when you turn people like this loose, you've got to understand, you know, you don't have a chance to edit. And to me, if I were going to put these guys out there, and maybe they'll take a lesson from this, and of course, maybe they won't. There's such a thing as pre-taping a segment, if you know, and then you can, then you're at least in control of it. But yeah, it was just, and I will go along with Dave. I was, you figure the kids signed with the Lakers. The Lakers play in the Staples Center. Raw's in the Staples Center, and so this is all, you know, this kid's supposed to be the savior of the Lakers. Whether that's going to happen, obviously, or not, you know, remains to be seen. But the reaction he got was just so, you know, was underwhelming, quite frankly. But as I said to you before we started recording, the thing, as I watched this segment, and yes, I did, but unlike the Enzo segment where Kaz beat the hell out of him last week, I didn't go back and watch it 15 times. as I watch, as far over the top and out of control and stupid as the father becomes, the kids' personalities are like about as exciting as wallpaper. So, I mean, just, you know, they're sitting there and whatever. The thing that got the public apology, I didn't hear. I missed that. But apparently a lot of people didn't. So.
on top of that, Les showing just how unselfish he is, burying the lead here about T-shirts, for God's sakes.
Okay. Well, first, before we get to that, I want to say that Vic and I both, we just talked about this before we came on the air, too. We want to send our thoughts and prayers out to Dave's dad and, you know, hope that he, you know, pulls through on this. And Lord, 90 years old, that's an amazing life, you know, to begin with. And when I'm turning 77 this year, I'm thinking, you know, I keep saying if the good Lord's decided to take me home tomorrow, I've lived enough life for three people. But the fact that he's, you know, still up and moving at age 90, God bless him. I think that's amazing. So anyway, for those who don't know what we're talking about, Dave's father is ill, and you know, so please, you know, remember him in your thoughts and your prayers. The thing about the T-shirts is actually just kind of a by accident thing, Vic. A friend of mine saying, "Well, you know, you need to put out a line of T-shirts," which I haven't had any remade, but there's an EPW T-shirt, you know, Learn from the Legends, which we initially put out when Harley and Steamboat and I started the company back in 2003 or 4, whatever it was. And, you know, and on the back it's, "If you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride," from the opening song of our show. And, you know, we sold a few, and it was never, you know, it wasn't like people were, you know, beating the door down to get them. But anyway, so he said, you know, you need to do something with a T-shirt. And I'm thinking, I don't know who might want my T-shirt. But anyway, so he hooked me up with Pro Wrestling Tees, or introduced me to the owner. And in the course of conversation, I mentioned to Ryan, who is the owner of the company, CEO, that in 1972, Brutes and Associates, which was owned by the Briscoes, Jack and Jerry and myself, came out with the very first ever wrestling T-shirt, which was Briscoe Boosters, and it had Jack and Jerry's likeness. It was, you know, a pen and ink drawing with their autographs. And it was the artwork was done by Jerry Lawler, as I have mentioned before, I think, on this show. But anyway, so when I mentioned this to Ryan, he said, "Well, wow, maybe maybe that's the way to go." And so, actually, we're in the process of supplying him. Jerry or I, neither one have been able to, surprisingly enough, hang on to a T-shirt that we might have been wearing on a daily basis in 72, 73, back in 74, or whenever. And I've, you know, but I've got an ad that was in the old Mid-Atlantic program that I produced before the Mid-Atlantic magazines. And so anyway, that's going to be sent up to Pro Wrestling Tees. So I guess, you know, you can look for a Briscoe Booster T-shirt. And if you're into nostalgia, this legitimately was the very first ever pro wrestling T-shirt that was put on the market.
What was the thought process behind that back in 1972? I mean, obviously nobody was doing them. So how did you, Jack and Jerry, sit down and come up with the idea?
I know I'm old and bitter and behind the times and everything, but back then I was young and actually ahead of the times. Well, to me, you know, I had mentioned to Jimmy Crockett, Jim Jr., that, T-shirts, well, rock bands and, you know, that sort of thing were growing in popularity, T-shirts. But like the band, you know, the long pointy banners the baseball teams had and so forth and so on. So, you know, he said, "Yeah, but I don't know if that'd work with wrestling or not." So it just, you know, so anyway, just Jack and Jerry and I were talking, and I mentioned, I said, you know, I think there's a play. I mean, obviously, you know, for some baby faces to do something. And so they said, "Well, let's do something." So that was, you know, basically the way it started. Jerry and I, we got with a screen printer in Charlotte, and now I'm sure with Pro Wrestling Tees, you know, these things will be available in whatever color you want, from what I understand, and they should be. Actually, this is 2017. But in 1972, It was a white T-shirt, you know, with black ink. And so Jerry and I started selling them out of, you know, we blowed up our cars in the arenas. They, and even when I moved to Atlanta, I had an extra bedroom which had, oh Christ, I don't know how many hundreds of T-shirts in it, but I, you know, I was handling the things. And then for a while, I moved the whole stockpile right here at the house I'm in out. My dad had built shelving out in the garage, and they were handling so mail order. But we were ahead of our time. One of the things was, you know, we didn't have the markup to, you know, share the wealth with a lot of people. And so there were certain venues that we didn't take them in simply because the venue, well, I can tell you one was Norfolk Scope wanted 40%. And so, you know, to haul the shirts to Norfolk and set up and one thing and another, and we weren't going to make a huge profit or virtually any. And then we advertised them in the Atlanta weekly program. We advertised them in the Charlotte weekly program, monthly program. Then Norm Keitzer, who did Wrestling News, traded out with me. I did some, you know, I wrote some columns for Norm, and in exchange for he put, you know, the ad for the T-shirts in the Wrestling News. And then the promoters got wind that, hey, those guys are making some money off these T-shirts. So then the promoters decided they wanted to cut too. So that was kind of where we, you know, once we ran out of the stock, we actually had gotten as far as talking to rich department stores, which for those who live all in different places, this is the southeastern part of the United States. They, we had been put in touch with them. And so at one point we came close to getting these T-shirts in the rich department stores. Had we have done that, obviously, you know, we would have continued on. But anyway, that's the story. And so, yeah, I'm not sure how quickly this will be done because, like I say, I'm supplying what artwork we have. I wish I had the original artwork. God knows what that would bring on the memorabilia market, you know, by Lawler having done the drawing. And but anyway, I'm supplying it to Pro Wrestling Tees, and they're going to put them out. And, you know, if you're it legitimately, there it was the very first ever wrestling T-shirts. We obviously didn't want to say Jack and Jerry Briscoe and Les Thatcher and so forth and so on. So I dubbed the company Brutes and Associates. So that was the name of the company. But so anyway, yeah, so it'll be coming out at some point here in the near future.
How long did you guys actually sell those shirts before you decided it was, you know, more trouble than it's worth when the promotion wants a piece?
Over a couple years. And actually we tried to expand it with Tim Woods, Wrestling 2, or Mr. Wrestling, Wrestling 2. Wrestling 2 was Johnny Walker, with Mr. Wrestling, with Bill Cowboy Bill Watts, and Thunderbolt Patterson. You know, but again, you know, the markup wasn't, I was looking at the old ad, we were, $3.50. How's that for a T-shirt? Today, what, they're 20, 18, 20?
Yeah, minimum.
Talk about inflation, huh? I saw that, Under Armour has, that Rocks Bull logo. Those friggin' Under Armour shirts are $49 or something. I'm like, yeah. Dwayne, I like you, but not that much. but yeah, so you know, like I say, we got a pretty fair stock. And when Jerry and I first started hauling them, you know, to the matches, they were selling. I mean, you know, of course, you know, when you got. We were standing behind the table. I remember I think one of the first places we took them was Fayetteville, North Carolina. And we didn't know, you know. But God, I don't know how many shirts we sold that night. We sold a bunch. And, but yeah, so that was the big thing, you know. We didn't have the markup, that we could start sharing 25-30% with the building and then a percentage with the promotion and for allowing us to sell them. And so it's like, you know, at that point it would become, we were basically working for them and we were getting little or nothing, you know, out of it. So once we ran out of stock, we just discontinued it.
I was asking about how long you guys did that, because I know that Jack won the NWA World Heavyweight Championship in Houston, July of 73. So I was wondering, my next question was going to be like, hey, did you guys end up selling a whole bunch more Briscoe shirts after he won the title?
No. Well, and you know why? I remember the day he won it, because the very next day.
Yeah, you nearly scared him half to death.
Yeah, we hit the brand new championship belt. Yeah, that was the first time Atlanta had flown me in. This was when we were negotiating me moving to Atlanta to work, handle stuff in the office and share the microphone with Gordon. And Jack had beat Harley on Friday night in Houston and took the red eye and came in and did the TV with Gordon and I on Saturday morning.
So this T-shirt project, it's interesting when I hear you say the story about how it ended up coming to an end with the promotion and what have you, and the conversation with Jim Crockett Jr., only in part because I've been watching all these NWA Saturday Night shows along with Brian and Vinny as they review these shows on the website, and I'm just reminded of some of the things, like, you know, one of the biggest things, you know, there's a lot of things people can point to about what happened and why Jim Crockett Promotions did not survive, was forced to sell to TBS, and would cause WCW and the whole thing. And a big part of that, a lot of people will say, aside from pointing to one specific person here or there, is the lack of a big-time infrastructure within the company, because they were moving so – they were doing such great business, even up to the point at the time where they had to sell. But there was, you know, you could see the difference. WWE had a huge marketing machine. They had all the merchandise. They had this and that. And by comparison, Jim Crockett Promotions was not really maximizing their merchandise potential. Even then, what, 12, 14 years later, after you had had this conversation with Jim Crockett. So I hear that, and it just, like, sets off a little bell for me. Like, ah, you know, you were having this conversation with him in 72, 73, and at least part of the reason they were not in a better, more stronger financial position was because they had not really fleshed out that part of their company.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the Crocketts owned the Charlotte Orioles, which was a double-A minor league team for the Baltimore Orioles. And they also, Jimmy, bought the Winston-Salem Polar Twins, which was a minor league hockey team, because I did the program for both the Orioles and the Winston-Salem Polar Twins. And, of course, I don't know, I'll be honest with you, I don't know if they had T-shirts, but I know that they had, you know, commemorative, like, mugs and the little pointy banners, for lack of a better name. I don't know what they are officially called, but, you know, the banners with the Charlotte Orioles logo on it and the Twins logo. So they did merchandise, you know, for the hockey team and the baseball team, which already was being done, you know, by hockey and baseball and basketball and football already. But, you know, when I think about it, as a young guy, and I feel, when I say this, I don't think I'm bragging, if I can back it, you know, a visionary in a way, because I was accustomed back then to being told that what I wanted to do wouldn't work, and proven that it did, you know, when so many people thought that Personality Profile wouldn't work on Southeastern Wrestling, and Ron said, go with it, you know, I trust you. And now, you know, everybody's making a big deal over the Roderick Strong thing, right? In 2017, and in 19, you know, we did it first in 1975, and then the thing with the T-shirts, which, you know, some people, that probably wouldn't fly, but it did. So, you know, and we were innovative with magazines, with the Mid-Atlantic Magazine, doing a lot of things that had not been done in wrestling magazines in the past. So I'm accustomed to being told that I don't know what I'm doing and being told it won't work. I grew up in the business on that.
Well, long before Brutes and Associates T-shirts or Personality Profile were so much as a gleam in your eye, this thing had to get started somewhere, Les Thatcher. And between now and the next time we get a chance to talk, a very important date in not just your history, but let's be honest, and I'm not ashamed to say it, in professional wrestling history, is going to go by this coming Tuesday, which is July 4th, and it's going to be your 57th anniversary in the wild, wacky, sometimes wonderful world of professional wrestling.
And sometimes frustrating and irritating as well. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, 57 years ago, this 4th of July, I will have had my first two matches in Blue Hills, Maine. There were four wrestlers. myself, Cowboy Ronnie Hill, Bull Montana, and a young guy from Boston, played football at Boston University, named Joe Red Sasso. And it was I worked the opener with Ronnie Hill, and Joe worked with Bull in the second match. This was at a fairgrounds 4th of July celebration in Blue Hills, Maine. And the ring was set up on the racetrack in front of the grandstand. And then the main event was Joe and I against Bull and Ronnie. And that was the beginning of, my God. When I look back, I get tired thinking about it. Well, you know, my in-ring career spanned 20 years, but you know, I've done, I don't know, as I'm not ashamed to say, I've done everything in the wrestling business except get rich, and I think it's a little late for that. But somebody asked me just the other day, you know, did I look back at this and feel that all this was going to happen? And I really didn't. You know, I was a young guy. My God, I was 19 years old when I started. You know, I was 21 by the first time I went to change worked to another territory. That was for Barnett Doyle here in over in Indianapolis. Then it was to from there to Calgary, from back to Indianapolis, and then to Kansas City, and back to on and the Carolinas, and I was just having a great time, and I was living my dream. You know, now you pass somebody in the gym, and hey man, I'm living a dream, and of course they're being sarcastic, meaning life's a pain in the ass. But I truly, was just. You know, people think, well, did you think this? Did you think that? I'd go out and look at a house, and there might be 200 people, there might be 2,000, there might be 10,000, but it never entered my mind that to document that or just pay me and let me work, wrestle, because this is what I've wanted to do since I was a small kid. And, and I was legitimately, completely living my dream. And the other things that had happened over that 57 years just are by being, I guess, in the right place at the right time, or sometimes I'm thinking maybe in the wrong place at the right time. I don't know. But the way things have evolved, somebody said, did you think you would be involved in all these facets? And no, I truly didn't. I won't get into the whole long, drawn-out story because we've told it before. But when I went to wrestle in Eastern Canada in 1970, for Rudy Kay, who had been my next door neighbor in Charlotte, and we had traveled together and worked team matches, and his commentator, there weren't teams at that time, it was one person doing the wrestling shows, and we taped in Halifax, and his commentator, his family had a death in Toronto, and he had to go back to Toronto, and I thought Rudy was ribbing me, because Rudy was a hell of a ribber when he called me on Monday and said, when we go to Halifax tomorrow, bring a suit, because you're going to be the commentator. You're going to host the wrestling show. And I thought, yeah. I said, no, seriously, and he told me what had happened. So I went in cold. I mean, it is, I tease you, and I always wanted to be a disc jockey, and I did, And I did some of the power announcing at our drag strip here in Cincinnati, it was just something that it was something I never figured I'd get to do as to make a living, but it was something that fascinated me. And of course, once I met Gordon Solie, wrestling commentators started to fascinate me. And so anyway, I went in cold and never read a format, had never segued in or out of a segment, or I've been interviewed before, but I had no clue, man. And anyway, I did the show a couple weeks, and Rudy said, wait, you're doing a hell of a job for us. I'm going to leave the guy stay, and you finish out the season. Now, I could have gone back up there, but he wanted me to come in management and not wrestle. And at the time, I'd only been wrestling, I've been wrestling 10 years, half of my in-ring career. And so I still wanted to get in the ring. And so he wanted me to come in and handle the weekly program help produce the television and work in the office and do PR and stuff. But So then when I came back, you know, Lord Littlebrook is the one that put the bug in Mr. Crockett, Jim Crockett Sr.'s ear. I came back out of Canada, went to Nashville for a while, went into Florida. That's when Danny Miller and I came to the Carolinas as a team in 71. And we were in the office one day, and Lord Littlebrook was there, and Brooke said to Mr. Crockett, he said, "Why isn't Les on your TV?" And Jim looked at him, and he said, "Well, he is on my TV." "No, no." He said, "You know, he was Rudy's commentator for the season last year in Canada and did a hell of a job." And Mr. Crockett said to me, "Well, you never mentioned it." And I said, "Well, it never came up." So they tested the waters and liked what they saw. And so I got hooked up, and then I went to Atlanta and then Knoxville, and Charlie Platt and I did the Dothan, Alabama show, and back to Knoxville, and of course, you know, produced some television that had never been, you know, stuff in wrestling television had never been done before. The magazine thing, I was looking through some old souvenir program photo albums in Mr. Crockett's office one day, and I said, "Mr. Crockett, you don't do these anymore?" And I forget who it was. He says, whoever had done it wasn't in the his employee any longer, or didn't live in the city, or had passed away, or whatever it was. He said, "Why don't you try it?" I said, "Huh?" And he said, "Why don't you try it?" I said, "Well, okay." He said, I'll pay you, you know, if you want to put one together." So I thought, why not? So that's how the whole magazine thing started. And then we did innovative things with wrestling magazines through the 70s. And then I did Vince Jr.'s WWWF Action Magazine as long as it was, I did the layouts and did the editing and so forth and so on. And as a trainer, I was minding my own business, doing competitive bodybuilding and working to, training people in the gyms. And Bob Harmon, the original Beautiful Bobby, said, "Hey, this guy has got a wrestling school. He's got an idiot as a trainer, and he needs to replace him with somebody else. Otherwise, he's going to lose his students." And I said to Bob, "Why are you telling me this? Because you're the guy, and I thought you're out of your friggin' mind." But then once I went and saw how bad these kids had been trained, I thought, well, I'll give it a whirl, and here we are. So, and then, Doc and I, now a lot of wrestlers have podcasts, but Doc Young and I, back in what was it, 05 or something, there was hardly anybody doing it then. So, a lot of this has just fallen into my lap, and I've said, yeah, let's try it. But you know what, Vic, honestly, I'm proud of what I've contributed to the business. I feel I have the respect of a lot of my peers, and I've been blessed to have wrestled some of the most amazing talents in the history of this industry. I've worked side by side with some of the greatest broadcasters, I've been able to work with a lot of the young talent that some of the major, playing with the major companies, as well as some that are, still prying their trade on the independents. So the good Lord has, give me an opportunity to do a lot of great things, and I've enjoyed the ride.
I may just be asking you to repeat some of the things you just got finished saying, but over the course of 57 years, and I know it's impossible to narrow it down to just a few, but what are some of the things that come to mind when I ask you about the things that maybe are your most fond memories or the things you're most proud of having accomplished?
Well, I think the innovations in the magazines and television, in training, some of the drills that I go to schools now that I've never been at, and I'll start to say, well, I have this drill called Triple Five. Oh, yeah, we do that. And I don't even know anybody there, So that means that it's other people have felt that the drill had a value. And, and I know a lot of, Harley and Steamboat and I doing the training manual, which is, of course, out of print now. But, the fact that you can get it on eBay for $400, I wish we'd printed a couple more thousand. I could use the money. I don't know. I think, given the opportunity to be a pioneer at some of these things, I think is part of it. But, as a kid, to wrestle guys that I had bought tickets to see, or just to share the camaraderie of, I remember, God love him, Luther Lindsay, me telling him, I had this little vinyl, autograph book, you know, vinyl covers that I got, you know, I used to carry down to Music Hall, with me, to get autographs when I was a kid. You've seen the picture of me and Buddy Rogers when I was like 12 years old. And I told him, Mr., you know, Luther, I've got your autograph. And he, how much you sell it to me for, so I can, you know, mean that everybody know I'm that old. But to have had the opportunity to wrestle the original Sheik, Dick the Bruiser, Big Bill Miller, to have traveled and made friends with people like Luther Lindsay, Johnny Weaver, Danny Miller, JJ, you know, but to wrestle the guys, Angelo Poffo, Art Nelson, guys who I bought tickets to see, was just, it was a thrill, you know, and to have won them over, to be able to perform at their level and have some of them ask to work with me. I don't know if there is a better, you know, compliment than that, than to be complimented by your peers. And so it's been a full life. It truly has. I don't know how I could sit down and isolate things. You know, I had the opportunity to work with Danny Hodge and Flair as a rookie, and Hiro Matsuda, and to learn from Eddie Graham and Leo Garibaldi, who I was a big Leo fan as a small kid, watching him and his dad in tag team matches in California, on TV from California. And then later to have Leo trust me with finishes and my ideas and stuff. So, you know, I may not be monetarily rich, but in terms of this last 57 years, I am memory rich, and the business is frigging frustrating at times. And there's times that I think, Jesus, I need to get away from it. But overall, it's been an amazing trip, my friend.
When you listen to this show, whether this is your first time or you're someone who listens regularly, keep in mind, while we're talking about 57 years in this business, you're listening to the insights of a man who wrestled Ric Flair, trained the next generation alongside Harley Race and Rick Steamboat, called wrestling matches with Gordon Solie, trained and broke into the business a Ring of Honor world champion, who, by the way, is now on the microphone in NXT, and put a whole lot of polish on Dean Ambrose, a WWE world heavyweight champion. And I'm shocked and a little bit appalled, Les Thatcher, that a couple of your highlights of your life were not ticked off as survived car rides with Wahoo McDaniel and survived partying all night with Ric Flair.
Well, there you go. I did survive. Well, riding with Harley too wasn't yeah. exactly a walk at the park. But yeah, party. Well, you know, somebody had said to me a few years ago, you mentioned partying with Flair. Said, you know, you guys. I said, yeah, we partied together, and they were talking about him. You know, Rick Steele. I said, my God. I said, do you realize, if I think about what we did back in the 70s, I get tired now just running it through my mind. So to try to keep up with him now, I wouldn't even begin. But, yeah, well, you know, and besides Gordon, I've been blessed to sit next to Bob Cottle, Lance Russell, Jim Ross, Charlie Platt, Ed Caprell, some of the best damn broadcasters that ever graced the business, and professional people. And to be able to say they're my friends, you know, that if, you know, if it came up again, that they enjoyed working with me as much as I enjoyed working with them.
So, Les, there are some interesting things in The Observer this week that I want to get your opinion on, especially drawing upon those 57 years worth of experience. First, the idea that these plans apparently have changed. Talk about it at the time where Vince McMahon had apparently set in stone Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns for WrestleMania next year. And apparently that timetable has been moved up quite a bit. It's now, as has been reported this week, on the books for the main event of SummerSlam, which is now, what, maybe about 6-8 weeks away. And speculation is on about what the new Mania idea must be, because Vince must have some plans if he's moved his WrestleMania main event up to SummerSlam. A lot of folks, Dave among them, thinking that Roman Reigns versus John Cena could be one of those things that's on the docket. First things first, your thoughts on moving this thing up from Mania to SummerSlam?
Well, they probably, I won't say they're in a panic, but I think they see the necessity of putting something strong, because SummerSlam is one of their biggest shows. And I'm assuming that's going to be in L.A., is it not? It usually is.
I think it's in Brooklyn this year.
Oh, is it in Brooklyn this year? Okay.
Yeah.
So, anyway. And the thing, well, you know, Cena and Lesnar are obviously two entirely different human beings. But, John, you know, I've been watching a little bit of that American Grit thing.
Right.
And, you know, John, when they show that little collage about John coming back, to realize he's hosted the ESPYs, he's, you know... Now, will I tell you that John stacks up with Flair or Steamboat or Harley as a in-ring performer? No, but I don't mean that as an insult either. There's not a lot of people that stack up with those particular people in terms of their ring in-ring. But I can see that John and Roman, if they build it right, you know, and of course, the undercard, I think at Mania, the undercard's important too. Well, I think anywhere the undercard's important. But I think you're talking about the people that are probably the most important in your business right now, and as far as WWE is concerned, and the people who you can pretty much be sure that are, well, you know, the crazy thing about Roman, he's over, but not the way they want him over. To switch it around the other way and make it Roman and Cena at SummerSlam is just too quick for that. I'm not sure that the Cena thing as a free agent is not going to dilute a little bit of the brand, you know, split. But it makes sense. And you know, nothing in this business is set in stone. I mean, you know, I always, as a booker, always try to plan ahead, as most competent bookers do, and yet because of injuries or because of the way people respond to a particular wrestler or don't, you know, is important as well. So everything considered, I would have liked to see, you know, now if they start, whenever they start this build between Brock and Roman, I honestly think that they could give Roman a pass on SummerSlam, and if they are smart, or smarter than we give them credit for, or whatever, Joe and Brock have got some mileage. If it's certainly the hottest thing that's happened in a while. I don't think Strowman and it seems I'm kind of like Dave and Brian. I think the way Strowman keeps handing Roman his ass, Roman's the guy's going to get his hand raised, and if you come down to the two of these guys, he's got more of an upside, at least right now, because Braun is greener, has less versatility, and obviously because, you know, is more limited than Roman would be. But I think you could take Brock and Joe through SummerSlam, be quite frank with you, give Roman a chance to you know, get over a little stronger, and then go with Roman and Cena if you're going to at WrestleMania.
I'd love to see them give Joe a longer run with Brock than what it looks like is on the books for right now. But halfway tongue-in-cheek question, halfway serious. I mean, how much more of Roman do we need to see before we decide that there's only so far he can get over in terms of the reaction they want?
Yeah. Well, you know, he's a heel. I mean, you can like him or don't, you know, but he's kind of, in a way, he's a tweener too, you know. I don't think that's the way obviously it's not the way they started it. And I, you know, if you remember when he and Dean and Seth first came on the scene, I said, all three of these guys have rock star looks. The young people like them because they're not pandering to the, I mean, they're kicking ass. And I said, I see all three of them as a strong baby face at some point. And I think the deal with Roman is just, it's the fans wanting, you know, because you're so intent upon getting him over, They're going to, as almost as intent of not getting him over. But, you know, you still see people waving, you know, the Roman Empire signs and people cheering him, you know. And I know I got bashed for saying, you know, the Elvis Presley thing, but Roman's a good-looking kid. And so I think a lot of the heat he gets from the male populace is because your wife or your girlfriend thinks he's so cute, and so that makes you mad, you know. He's most assuredly. And you know what? Maybe if they started pushing him as a damn heel, I mean, you know, and his promos of late, I can't see anything babyface about him, do you?
No, not even a little bit.
No. He's arrogant, cocky, whatever. And, you know, I think just push him as a kick-ass heel. And at some point, you know, he'll end up back as a babyface anyway. I hope, though, not like, and this is an aside, I again watched Impact last night, and, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, wow, okay, it's been 2 months ago more recently that James Storm was wearing a suit and a funny white plastic mask, and it was a member of some faction, and they were heels. And now he's a strong babyface, and E3 was a babyface about the same time, and now he's a hot heel. And I'm thinking, that's just, I mean, and that's, you know, we make jokes about Big Show and how many times Paul has been switched back and forth, and, you know, 1,000 times over X number of years. But, you know, you diminish the value of your people by doing that back and forth. And I think if you just go ahead and push Roman, as you know, and let him hand Ambrose's ass, and I don't mean, you know, to kill Dean off or Seth, you know, so sever that whatever umbilical cord is left between, you know, that faction, and at some point, you know, you can bring, you know, the fans will help you turn him into a babyface again.
Why do you think they've been so resistant to that?
I think because, you know, social media and having a little more, well, having a bit of knowledge that you probably think you're smarter about this business than you really are. And they want their way, you know. I think you see a little bit of that, you know, in sports as well. In other sports, and I know I see, you know, if you watch First Take on ESPN or some, you know, where they throw up text messages from fans and stuff, it's like you know, the inmates want to run the asylum, as it were. I'm still believe that Larry Bird knows more about basketball than I do, and or Charles Barkley, or, you know, if Bill Belichick says this was a smart thing for the Patriots to do, I may not have liked it at first, but I think Bill's smarter than I am, so I'm willing to, you know, to, okay, well, hey, he's got all these Super Bowl rings and I don't have one. You know, but the wrestling fans are, it's at every level, you know, they want to run the show. And I think it's, and in part, a rebellion of sorts, I guess, because, but let's face it, you know, especially with WWE, they've been handing you the evil commissioner, or the evil owner, or evil whatever, since Austin and Vince, right? It's old hat. It's overstayed its welcome, I think, a lot of the stuff. So, this is just a point, I think, where, you know, they want something, and you know, I wonder, too, especially in the buildings, Vic, if you're a casual fan, maybe you don't really care if Roman's a babyface or a heel or gay or heterosexual or Republican or Democrat, but you're sitting there and everybody around you is booing the hell out of him. Well, I don't, you know, I should do that too. I think some of it's, you know, that Pavlov's dog thing.
Well, he's certainly been a point of contention for a lot of people for a long time, regardless of what you think of him and why you're, you know, either thrilled or upset with how he's viewed by upper management, by Vince McMahon himself, and why he's in the position that he's in. It's certainly not on the same level, but, you know, someone who has also become interesting and polarizing, to use a quote from Dave in the most recent edition of The Observer, is the new Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion, Cody Rhodes, who has himself a pretty big date this weekend in Long Beach, California, against Kazuchika Okada for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Cody, of course, winning the Ring of Honor World Championship last weekend at Best in the World. And I bring this up because I think it is quite an interesting situation with Cody that Dave has written about here, and I just want to get your take on this as well, Les. Again, in a lot of social media circles and message boards alike, you read that his run has not been all that impressive in terms of, I guess, match quality would be one of the things that I think a lot of people are less than thrilled with to this point. For whatever reason, and I haven't seen a whole lot of Cody, to be quite frank with you, since he's left the company, and I'm looking forward to checking him out this weekend with his match against Okada. But there are folks who are not sure that necessarily he's up to snuff in that standpoint and the current state of big-time independent wrestling, if you will. And by the same token, you see nothing but respect for him from the independent promoters and the guys that he's been working with. And then, after hearing all that stuff about Cody can't do this, Cody don't do that, Cody's not good enough, hey, they were right about Cody to not push him, yada, yada, he shows up at Best in the World last weekend, and he's absolutely beloved. So much so that they actually turned things around when they taped TV in the same venue the next night and basically had him as the babyface in a rematch with Christopher Daniels. And that's another part of it. You know, Chris Daniels, longtime wrestler, has been doing this forever, is absolutely fabulous and was in the midst of something of a Lifetime Achievement Award title run. So you would think it'd be hard to find a reason to boo that guy. Yet the crowd absolutely double-turned both of them.
Yeah, you're right. It's mysterious on one hand, but you know, like I said to you before we started recording, one of the things maybe we should look at. Now, I'll be honest. When Cody asked for to get out of his contract with WWE, it wasn't that I didn't think he could make a living on the indies or wherever he was going to work. But I didn't think he would make the impact that he has made. And as I said to you before we started recording, could it be that this is a prime example of how WWE doesn't see something in somebody and sits on them? And when we're talking about match quality, realize there's more to this than how many goofy bumps or how many rotations off the top or how many dives. It tells you a story that somebody that mechanically is a solid performer and yet not spectacular in his aerial achievements, and which, quite frankly, again, I'm either behind the curve or no better or whatever, but, is still over simply because of his personality or maybe, you know, and maybe part of this is to do with Dusty, you know, but the point is, Ring of Honor is playing off of it. Now, you know, he doesn't have a contract with them, and yet he's basically taken their title and work in other places as their, as their champion, which I don't see a problem with that. But, he's not our contract. But I'm sure there must be some sort of agreement with Ring of Honor I can't imagine. He said, well, just go do what you want with that belt. Because that's not good business. I don't care who what company it is. But he's over. You know, is he over everywhere? Is he, and you know what? Could it be? We're talking about 2017. We're talking about internet experts or smarks or whatever the hell, you know, the terminology happens to be today or tomorrow. But maybe because, somebody knocks him because he left WWE, or somebody says, well, he's not going to get over because he's not Okada, or he's not, Kenny Omega, or he doesn't do 47,000 friggin' super kicks. Maybe now the fans are saying, well, we're going to show you. You know, it's hard to say. But I think part of it is, how many stupid gimmicks did he have while he was with WWE?
A few.
Yes. And, but he's a solid worker. So I don't know. You know, it's I wish him the best. I think in part this is because he's Dusty's son. I think that's maybe just a smidgen, just a small percentage, but I think that comes into play. You know, I think people are willing to give. Now, if Charlotte hadn't been able to perform, the fact that she was Ric Flair's mother or daughter or sister or whatever wouldn't have mattered. But she can. And so, you know, so maybe that, you know, the Dusty, the being the son of Dusty Rhodes is part of it. The fact that he had the balls, if you will, to say, I don't want to work here anymore because you're not using me to my potential. Maybe that, you know, he's a rebel. I'm going to support him. Does that make sense?
Sure.
You know, so it's hard to say. And then if we're talking about Ring of Honor, as a young wrestler told me a few years ago, he said, I love the Ring of Honor dressing room, but I hate the frickin' fans because they chant some of the stupidest things at the wrong time. So I it's a combination of all those things. And the fact that he's not rated by stars as having to match that Okada and Kenny, that's not relevant either, you know. And I don't mean that as any disrespect to Dave or to anybody else, but it's not relevant, you know. It's the energy, the spark that you produce with your audience, and that doesn't mean there. Listen, there are guys doing 50 dives a friggin' night. Did you see the thing that Randy Orton did about dives on the radio show?
Yes.
God love him. It's not how many friggin' dives. You know, there are guys doing 50 dives a night that are never going to make it anywhere. They're going to work in front of 50 to 100 people the rest of their lives and believe that, you know, they're coming up. But they don't have the other talents. And that's the one thing I will say for Cody. He has a good foundation. He understands the technical, technical things about our business that the average fan pays no attention to. So I don't care if he gets has a 5-star match or a 3-star match or any one particular person's opinion. If he's doing the job, if he's getting over, if people are buying tickets, then he's over, you know? It's 2017, I guess, maybe is the best way to answer it. But, you know, he's going to wrestle Okada. And if somebody, well, they didn't have the same match that Kenny Omega. Well, he's not Kenny Omega. And they don't need to. And if they're having the same match, then you don't need Cody Rhodes. You just need Kenny Omega. I'm going to say, as a former performer, thank God it's going to be a different match. You know, I'm tired of going to shows and seeing 12 guys have the same match in 6 matches. That doesn't interest me in the least. It's been done to death, and I don't care to see it ever again. And if he can get the reaction working holes and on the mat or kicking and punching or whatever it is that he's doing that they're getting and draw the same kind of reaction and bring people in, then more power to it.
An extreme example, but you know what? If match quality was the be-all, end-all business, Hulk Hogan might still be playing bass in some nightclub in Tampa.
Yes. If match quality had anything to do with it, he would be playing bass in Tampa.
The other thing about him being the world champion these days, and, you know, they say he's not under contract. Everybody who you talk to will tell you that Cody has not signed a deal. You know, they could be snowing us all, and he's already in, and we don't know that, but if you go just on what's been said, the idea that he's the right guy for the right time and the company's going with him anyway, thumbs up to them for doing that. And obviously, it must say, at least in my opinion, this is how I would read into it, says a lot about the character of the man that the company does not have him under contract and trust him with this anyway.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, this came up last week or so. Rudy Gonzalez brought it up about, one of the reasons that Flair and Briscoe and Funks and Kaninsky and Thez and on and on and on, because they weren't limited to wrestling only in St. Louis or in San Francisco or in Chicago. They wrestled all over the world. And so this possibly, we're talking about match quality or opposed to acrobatic quality. I would go back. I would like to see another hour between CM Punk and Samoa Joe that I saw in Dayton a number of years ago, or Nigel and Daniel, Brian Danielson, Daniel Bryan, whatever you want to call him, that was done in England. Those, you know, and I would tell you that that probably wasn't in terms of stars or in terms of acrobatic, you know, exhibition, probably didn't match Okada and Omega, but they still drew and it was still solid. So maybe this will do more for Ring of Honor than we think, you know, by, as, you know, by their champion going out to other places to, you know, to defend the belt or his honor or a combination of both.
One last order of business for you to wrap up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. And no, unfortunately for all you New Japan Pro Wrestling fans, we will not be breaking down each competitor in each show of the G1 Climax that's coming up. I'm sorry to disappoint you with that. But I do have one question about the G1 Climax that I think is pretty pertinent. And it's the fact that now that the blocks have been announced and the participants in each individual block have been announced, we are going to get Okada versus Omega 3 before this G1 tournament is over, Les. And the decision to do that I find quite interesting, and I just want to get your take on it, because you're now getting this third match in the series relatively quickly after the 60-minute draw they had not all that long ago. And again, you know, they had their first match in January of this year. Does that seem like they're in a hurry to you, and do you think there's any reason for that? And B, the idea that they went 40-some-odd minutes the first time, a 60-minute draw last time, and now a match with a 30-minute time limit. By conventional booking methods, you would think that the next match is 90 minutes or no time limit. Strategy, maybe, in making it a 30-minute time limit match, as all G1 tournament matches are?
Well, you know what? New Japan does a lot of good work, but it doesn't mean they like the rest of us, they can't make a mistake. Humans make mistakes. But I think I'd tease it a little more. And again, you know, they've had a great success, and it's a company that, you know, if you're not measuring necessarily by asses in seats or the particular television ratings, is probably, you know, one of the more consistent companies. Well, I know one of the things, you know, they're not afraid to beat somebody. They, you know, but I would wait. I would have held this off. Call it a rubber match, call it whatever you want, but I would have held it off and probably gotten Omega over in the third match, and then it each would have won one. They had a draw, so they're getting at least, you know, four. But I think it's a little soon, you know. Tease the people with it, make them want it a little more, and I think that would be a smart move too.
Kenny Omega does not have to announce his intentions to anybody in New Japan Pro Wrestling before late January, maybe not even until early February. The fact that they're putting this match on here, do you think they know something we don't know?
Well, maybe they do. Of course, I'm sure they know a lot of things we don't know. You know, that's why a lot of times I come up short, you know, to make predictions, because you don't know the thought process of the people that are booking these shows or the people that are coming up with the angles, the storylines, the finishes. So, you know, you're only guessing too. But yeah, maybe, you know, but as I had said to you, we talked about this a couple times. First of all, I know they sign a lot of people to one-year contracts. I'm coming into this country, and he's the hottest that they have in their, you know, on their roster. Then, first of all, Kenny, I want you for at least 2 years, 3 years, so I can establish, you know, our footprint in North America. And secondly, as I said earlier, after watching these two matches, the last thing I need to see him doing is dumb comedy with the Bullet Club. And that would be part of the contractual thing. If that costs you a few bucks more, then pay it. But, you know, this guy comes, he's articulate. He comes, you know, the matches they have had have been beautifully done. I can sit here as a, you know, as a former booker, performer, trainer, whatever, and tell you ways to make that they did this too quick, or they did should have added this, whatever. I mean, you can always find a way to make things better, and great performers are never satisfied. The Harley Races, the Ricky Steamboats, the Chris Benoit's, the Rick, you know, they're always looking for a way to improve their matches. All of us, I think, that really care you know, and take pride in her work or that way. So, but I would, you know, that would have been my thing. If he's under short-term contract, maybe this is the right thing. You know, let's put him in there, let Okada hand him his ass, and move on, because we're not going to have him. I don't know, you know, and of course that's only speculation for any of us, unless somebody you or I know has got a strong inside with management of New Japan, and I don't know that we do.
Well, if you are into match quality, the G1 Climax tournament has been pretty much the thing for you, especially the last 4 or 5 years. I expect this one to be much the same, so if you don't already have your subscription to New Japan World, where all those shows will be available either live or on tape delay at some point over the course of July and August, now's your chance. You need to get on that thing and get it now while you can, because these shows are going to be fantastic, and you're guaranteed a third confrontation between Okada and Omega. My friend, we are coming very close to the end of this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. Before we do that and bring this thing to a close, I want you to have the floor to let everyone know where they can get a hold of you for bookings.
Yeah, well, first, again, I want to mention Dave's dad, 90 years old. He and his wife been together 66 years. My God, that's just a beautiful thing. But Dave's father has entered hospice with pancreatic cancer and kidney failure, and God love him. Please keep Mr. Meltzer in your thoughts and your prayers. And, yeah, you can reach me at Les@EPWT.com, LesThatcher@Zoomtown.com. My webmaster is put up on the front page of EPWT.com. You know, sort of an outline of what I do in a one-day seminar or a weekend training camp. He also has posted a link to what they call the Star, I think Star Makers or something, the top 20 schools or trainers, and I am proud, and I don't know who put this together, but I'm proud and honored to have been listed in number 3 out of 20, and I'm humbled by that. But you can, I'll be more than happy to send me an email. I'll be more than happy to send you what the numbers are that are necessary, and again, communicate with you. And obviously, if you were signed to a booking, I will most assuredly plug it here on the show on a weekly basis. And October 13 and 14, I know I'm going to be in Jersey. So put that on your calendar there, Sosa.
I got it.
Yeah, we're doing Kevin Kelly and I, and plus I'm not sure who else. Danny mentioned a couple other names that I won't mention them until he's made them, locked them in and put it up the advertising himself. But, yeah, we're doing another super camp at the Monster Factory. He's got another one coming up here in early July, too. But, and I want to wish everyone a safe and enjoyable 4th of July. Vic is headed to Florida to visit with family. I'm not headed anywhere except to the gym here in the next few minutes. But kind of look for the Briscoe Booster T-shirt at Pro Wrestling Tees coming up. And I don't know how quick they'll get around to getting something like that out. But it does have historical significance. It was the first ever wrestling T-shirt. We put that out in 1972. To all of you, a great 4th of July, and Vic, travel safe, and I'll miss you next week, but look forward to hooking back up with you in 2 weeks.
Yes, sir. I appreciate the kind words. I've spent enough money on this travel, it better work out.
Well,
I better be safe.
You know, I told Danny when we booked that 13th is a Friday the 13th in October. And and I said, I'm not flying. I said, I've seen so many, you know, shaking planes that had to land quick and gas pouring out of engines. And I said, please bring me in on the 12th. I don't want to be any place in the air on Friday the 13th. So, yeah, safe travels. And I know you'll be driving yourself nuts. What airport are you flying out of?
Newark.
All right. Well, that'll be a little different than LaGuardia or Kent.
My God. No. They're redoing. They just committed to spending a whole lot of money. In fact, they may even be working on it right now. They put a whole lot of money into refurbishing LaGuardia Airport, thank God.
Yeah, that place is older than I am. Isn't it? and there's not a lot that is older than I am. But, yeah, be safe, my friend. Enjoy yourself, and I look forward to you coming back.
Thank you. Hope you all have a very happy and healthy and safe, most importantly, 4th of July weekend. Preferably watching the fireworks, not handling them, please. Thank you. And the other thing, of course, my friend, since you're going to be celebrating your anniversary, happy anniversary to you. It's both an honor and a pleasure to get a little bit of your knowledge every week.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
We're wrapping up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. That's the legend, Les Thatcher. My name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to spend it with us. And since we're off next week, we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks.